This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Community Focus. WEEI is proud to be part of the community. The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community Focus.
You're listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams. We are once again here in the studio here at the Community Focus program, where each week we try to bring in personalities and the luminaries throughout Boston, throughout the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and also across the nation. And we are so grateful today that we have a returning guest, Sharon Baker. Sharon is with the Life Emissaries of New England, as well as Life After Death. She is a Boston native, but she resides in Brockton. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Mr. Williams.
Well, thank you so much for coming back and being with us. I think the last time you were with us, it was back in June, and we found that your message was so resounding and comfortable that we thought it would be really good to bring you back, because I wanted to give you really this whole message time for us to really kind of drill down to get to really know who Sharon is and what is your ministry and what is it that you're doing. But before we get into actually all of that, let's talk a little bit about you. You're a Boston native, so tell us a little bit, you know, where did you grow up, brothers, sisters? And
so I was born and raised in Boston all my life, pretty much.
What neighborhood?
Dorchester, Mattapan. Those were my stomping grounds.
Okay. And did you find you had any brothers? How many brothers or sisters you had?
I had two brothers, no sisters.
Okay. Are you younger, older?
I was in between.
Okay.
So I'm the middle older child. Brother?
You're the middle child?
Yes, sir.
And so did you get bypassed in that circle or everything?
I was just talking to someone the other day saying I was just that middle child. My mother loved that one and my father loved that one and Jesus loved me.
So you actually can't turn out pretty good then.
I've been through some hoops and...
Well, you know, but that's what life is all about, Miss Baker.
Yeah.
So you grew up in both Mattapan and Dorchester. So talk about some early development. What were some of the early values that you learned from your parents or older brother or younger brother? What were some of those values?
So as growing up as a middle child, an only girl, I sometimes felt left out, but I always knew I was special and I was daddy's little girl. Mm-hmm. And my brothers didn't play. You know, growing up, we had to go to North Carolina. I remember at an early age, 9, 10 years old, going to North Carolina on June 23rd. Every day school was out. And the reason being for that is because my grandfather was a farmer.
Okay.
And at that time, he was a sharecropper. He didn't own his own land. He, rented from folks. And so we had to go down to help him to better his finances. That way he wouldn't have to, you know, bring Darnell Williams to work for him and pay him.
So because family members worked on the farm so that he can grow. Was there any particular crop that
tobacco?
Tobacco? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's usually North Carolina was like that, right?
Yes.
That was big tobacco country. So you picked tobacco during the summers?
We cured tobacco.
You cured it?
Yes.
All right. For those people who don't know what cured tobacco is, what is that process?
So the process was my grandfather would plant and harvest his fields. He had many, many acres, and he would prepare, and by June, it had flourished. So we would have to get on this machine with the harvester, and there would be a tractor in front pulling it.
Pulling the machine, pulling the,
the machine that the croppers and loopers were on.
Okay.
And we would go up and down the rows, and once we did that, we would take it back to the barn and hang it. And
it had to dry out?
We had to light the barn for it to cure, correct.
So it was kind of like a smoking, kind of like a smokehouse kind of a deal?
Yeah, it was a tobacco barn.
Okay,
that's what
okay.
they called it.
Well, you know, they used to do meat like that, too. So I think it's the
they
same.
Did. They do put it
but
in
but they
there.
Did it in the same barn, but they did it in similar process, I think.
You're absolutely right.
You know?
Yeah, because we've remember done
when
it.
I remember when they used to dig a hole and put the meat down in the ground in order to keep it cold during the winter.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how they used to put them. That's, we ain't talking about meat. We're talking about tobacco, though.
Right, right. We telling your age, no. So, yeah, it was a process. It was a process.
Okay, so what did you learn from doing all of that?
So at the time, Mr. Williams, I used to hate it because...
Call me Dr. D. Yeah.
I used to hate going to
North Carolina. You hated why?
Because I was that child that never got to go to camp.
Okay.
So the YMCA today, it's like, make sure you send those kids there. Make sure you send them to camp, because I never got that opportunity.
So you had a childhood that was really focusing on labor.
That's
and
it.
So that means, but you, that so what would be the value, even though that you didn't like it or you said you hated it, but you did it. But what would you say that you got from it?
So today, if I could turn back the hands of time, I would do it again, because I got the concept. I was taught how to go work and how to survive. That was a survival mode, just not for my grandfather, but those values of life that were poured into me made me who I am today.
So you got a strong work ethic.
Yeah.
You had a survival mode.
Yeah.
How about instincts? Well, what happened to you instinctively? Could you read people? Did you can spot somebody coming two blocks away? So there had to be some other stuff going on.
So today... it's called, I would say, discernment.
Okay.
And I truly know, because of not just North Carolina, other places that I've been in, God has given me a discernment to...
A discerning spirit.
Yes. And okay. to know people and pretty much not read them, but to, if I meet a woman... I can say, you know, she ain't for me.
Okay, so in other words, you can say, you can determine that if your spirits are in alignment with someone, you can feel that. So that discernment lets you know if this somebody's got my back, or
yes.
if this person is going to be somebody trying to come after me in some kind of way, your antennas go up.
Yes.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's only nobody but the power of the Lord.
So I think the key is that's what we would say, that it gives you a real good, what do I call, spiritual antenna.
Yes.
Okay? All right? So we are here with Sharon Baker, Life Emissaries of New England, Life After Death. You grew up in Boston. And so what is it that you went to school, you got some good, valuable lessons coming out of North Carolina. Talk about your Boston experience. What were some of the things that you learned or experienced here in Boston?
So growing up in the urban edge.
The urban edge, what do you mean?
So Roxbury back then was a place that I was afraid to go near.
Why?
They would take your sneakers off your feet.
Get out.
Dorchester was a safe haven for me. Mattapan, as I grew older, my parents moved to Mattapan. They purchased a house on Stanton Street in Boston. And that was just a safe haven for me. I went to High Park High School. I had to fight my way through school.
Why did you have to fight your way through high school?
So that was the late 70s when it was busing back then.
Okay.
And it was prejudice in the world. it's not so much still here, but it's here still.
You don't think that we'd have prejudice and bias today?
We do.
Okay, so in other words, we're revisiting, we're reliving what we thought we had won.
Correct.
Is that? I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm asking.
So we do, in some ways, but it's not so much exposed as hidden. It's a hidden agenda.
Okay.
But when it comes out, you're like, I see it. There it is.
Right. I think back in the 70s, whether regardless where you were, it was more overt. It was out and it was in your face. Mm-hmm. It was hostile. It was whatever. Mm-hmm. Today you're saying, well, somewhat still today, we're seeing a resurgence of that. Mm-hmm. But I think that most people will say that we have grown as a society. Yes. We've become more tolerant, we become more respectful, but it seems like there's such a resurgence of it. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that statement?
I do agree. Here in the world, as for me though, I don't see color because my grandchildren are black and white. The way I was raised, we didn't see color, even though I would see what we would say the white man come to my grandfather and say, Robert Baker, you have my money. And today, that hurts, but...
But what was the context of that?
So, because my grandfather was a sharecropper, he didn't have his own.
So, in other words, he had to pay at a certain time the owner of the land for your grandfather to use that land and to harvest his crop.
Correct.
And so there was a certain, so when he came to get his money, what I'm interpreting from what I hear you saying, they weren't nice about it.
Absolutely not.
And that's what you're really telling me.
And I seen it with my own eyes.
Okay. And so how did that make you feel when you heard or seen it, witnessed? What did it do to you and to your spirit?
Always made me say to myself, when I grow up, I want to have something that I can call my own.
Okay.
I want to be successful in life. I don't want my grandkids to go through
what you had to go through.
What I had to go through. And I tell my children every day, be all you can be.
How many children do you have?
I have four, one deceased.
Okay. So that means you have three living children?
That's correct.
And your child that you lost, are you comfortable talking about the loss of that child?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so tell us, Tyrell.
So Tyrell was my youngest child. Very good boy, wasn't the best, but he was my child.
Was he kind of, I'm not suggesting that he was fast lane, but he was out there?
No.
So he wasn't?
No, he was
okay.
not. Okay,
no, so I'm asking you. So he was a good kid?
He was a good kid.
That's good.
He was a good, when I say he was a good kid,
Well, the only reason I said that because you said he wasn't the best. Well, I didn't know what I didn't
when
know
I
to
say
that.
When I say that, I mean smoked his pot, you know, loved his marijuana.
Well, him and about 900 million other kids.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was his thing. Mommy, Tyrell put that joint down every time you seen him. He would be smoking, but he was a child that for me had been here before.
We call that an old soul.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was an old soul, very liked person.
So he had a good personality.
He was so loved. His home going was so packed. People were outside the door. His legacy lives on today. And that's where life after death comes from.
Okay, now was his service in Boston? Was it in Brockton?
It was in Brockton. He was murdered in Brockton.
Okay. I used to live in the Campello section, so I know a little bit about Brockton.
Oh, Jesus.
you'll never know anything. You know, I'm always coming up with something.
You everywhere, Mr. D. Yep. Campello, the old bat station.
That's right. I used to work there. My insurance company was right there on the fairgrounds.
Wow.
So that's how I saw it. I got a little history.
Okay.
Yeah, Fonzie Motors was on 123, so I can... The sub shop was right down there. I think it was D'Angelo's. I think if it was right there.
Yeah, that's right. It sure was. Wow, you're going back a little bit. Yeah.
See, you don't know what I don't know, man.
I got to stay connected with Mr. D, right?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So your son was a good kid. You lost him. Was it a solved or unsolved homicide dealing with your child?
It was unsolved for me.
Okay.
But in the judicial system, his records are somewhere in the back of somebody's archive that are just sitting there with no murderer. Who killed my son?
Okay. So how does that... There are thousands of cases, or not thousands, maybe. You know, there's a lot of unsolved homicides here in Boston and throughout the Commonwealth and across this nation. So how do you reconcile that in your spiritual discernment? How do you go forward? Because you still got three living children. How do they deal with that, and how do you deal with it as a mother? Because the reason I'm asking is because you can help other people who are listening to you that might be struggling with that same question.
So for me, Dr. D, every day is a struggle with losing a child. For me, the way I get through, it's just the grace of God and His mercy that follows. And everybody's not where I'm at, but I tell you, if you trust God, He will work it out, and He will give you peace that surpasses all understanding. So the way I deal with it, I got this little organization called Life After Death, and it's a support group that we meet every third Saturday of the month at the Brockton Branch Library from 12 to 2. And we have seven principles that we pick one: love, peace, joy, happiness, forgiveness. And we go around the room and we bring in our loved ones into the circle. And then we pick and identify what one of those topics, whether it be...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to make sure I get them all. Love, peace, joy, forgiveness.
Unity.
Hope. And one more.
Prayer. Yes.
Prayer?
Love.
Okay. No, love was... It got love.
Okay, prayer.
I got peace.
Is that seven?
Joy, forgiveness, unity, hope, and then prayer.
Yes.
Is that all of them?
That's all of them.
And so you pick one each week on the third Saturday of every month?
That's correct.
And what happens after that? What do y'all do as Life After Death? So it's a support group for folks who have lost loved ones?
Yes.
Okay. How do they find you, or how do you find them?
So I'm out in, you know, the street of Brockton. I give out tracts, flyers. I post information on Facebook, social media.
So you do social media?
That's correct. We have team groups once a month. We meet with my board. It's five of us.
So you have five board members who are working with you. So you're not doing this as a one-person paper hanger.
No. At first I was, but I can't do it by myself.
You can't, right? Because you'll get burnt out.
Yes.
So these other four individuals, is five more or just four more, and you make the five?
I make the fifth. That's correct.
All right. So you got four people working with you, and you come. So how do y'all go about picking the topic for the discussion for that third month?
So we go around the room, and we ask to, you know, my name is, I'll say, hi, my name is Sharon, and I'm welcoming Terrell in the room. And it's written down on the board, and I will say I'm going to go with hope today.
Okay. So in other words, it's kind of like organic.
Yes.
And so whatever somebody may be sensing or feeling or thinking about, so you usher in the knowledge and the memory of your lost loved one into the room for the discussion, and then everybody else will feed off of that particular word, whether it's love, peace, joy, forgiveness, unity, hope, and prayer. And then everybody else will go around the room to talk about their loved one, and what they're feeling around that word.
Absolutely.
And so you do it for 2 hours. So can you kind of walk us through what? So how does that benefit the group that's there?
So the way it benefits me for myself, I get to talk about my feelings. What goes on in group stays in group.
Confidentiality.
It's a major, major, major.
So there are some ground rules.
There are some ground rules and some bylaws. And we together as a team, you know, initiated them. And so we that's how we do it. We don't sit for 2 hours. We have lunch.
Okay.
We feed, you know, the people. There's days like this Saturday, I have two speakers coming in, and I try once a month to bring in a guest speaker.
So outside speakers.
That's correct.
And those outside speakers also use that same word that has been identified by the group, or they come in with their own message?
They're coming in with their own message.
Okay.
To give to
the inspiration,
women.
Encouragement.
Yes.
But they know what the formation of the group is all about.
Absolutely.
So are these individuals, how are they chosen or selected?
So I pray about it, and I ask God, what will you give me for the month? So this month I'm having a domestic violence advocate come in and speak on domestic violence. And I'm also having a book writer coming in to talk about if anybody wants to get started on writing their book.
Okay. So in other words, how to write a book.
How to write a book.
So when you think about when you chose this domestic violence speaker to come in, do you think that domestic violence from your lens is very prevalent in our community?
It's very high maintenance. You know, it's something still today that women do not want to talk about, do not want to even look at. And for me, it needs to be surfaced. Even with myself, I was in Lawrence, Mass. Yesterday doing a conference speak out, and that was the topic for me, was domestic violence and battered women. So I touched bases on those two entities.
So you were a speaker at this conference or speak out?
I was a speaker, yes sir.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So what was the takeaway from the Lawrence experience?
So the room was loaded and
were mostly women or mixed?
There was a couple of men there, and okay. You know, you have to talk about the peace, because we as women, and I let the women know, we're batterers as well. It's not always the man.
Okay.
Because if I come in and see you talking to Susie, it's on and popping. Why are you in her face? You know.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Women can be assertive, aggressive, and also abusers, what you're saying.
And we need to identify that.
Oftentimes, there are men who don't recognize that they can become victims of domestic violence because they felt that this relationship is something. We know something is wrong. We just don't know what it is.
Right.
We don't know what to call it.
Right.
And usually in the domestic violence situation, people try to control who you talk to, where you go, how much money you get. They try to control everything. How you think, how do you feel about yourself? They cause your self-esteem to be eroded. It's about control. It's power. It's a power dynamic. So when you're doing this work and you also have the life after death, do you see any commonalities between those two topics?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. In these relationships, for me, I've been a victim of many. And I was telling
many what?
Victims. I've been a victim of homicide. I've been a victim of domestic violence. I've been a victim of rape. I've been a victim of many things out here in the streets, of drugs, alcohol, and we can go on and on.
Can I just put this into your spirit? Mm-hmm. That yes, you are a victim, but I would want to change the word, that you are a survivor.
I just said that. I'm a survivor.
You're a survivor. You have overcome these things. Because greater that he that is in you than he that is in the world.
Yes.
And so these things that happen to us, they may be tragic and they may be unfortunate. But the God that I know will give you the strength to go through these barriers, overcome them, put them into context, and then you become a healing instrument for other people that are going through it.
That's it.
And so that's what I when I see you and I see how long you've been at this, that's what I see.
Thank you.
So you are beyond just a victim. You are a survivor.
I am a survivor.
And you are a healer, and you're what I call a servant leader.
Mm.
So that's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, and so when we have this conversation here, there are people who are out there, they suffer in silence.
You're right, and that's what I'm working on with in Brockton, the Cape Verdeans.
Okay.
I had a woman, I did a group, we're doing this quilt back in the days when, you know, they used to sew.
Yeah, mama didn't put the quilt together.
Yeah.
Patch here, patch there.
Absolutely.
Put some stuffing in there.
Absolutely. So we are making this quilt with Mom Demand Action, another organization. In the quilt, we can put a picture of our loved ones in it.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's different.
Yeah. And this quilt can go all over the world. We're the third ones to do this quilt, and it's made up of 48 patches. So at that group, we were missing 8 people that signed up but didn't show up. So now we have to do another group in November to complete this quilt.
So right now, that means that if you got 8 people, that means you have 40 patches right now where people are identified.
Yes.
And you got to get 8 more new folks.
Yes.
That are going to actually show up. And not show up and show out, but show up.
Absolutely. So the people, because I did have 48, but for some reason they couldn't make it that day.
Yeah.
So I've spoke to them, so they're coming.
How big is the quilt?
The quilt is a quilt, the size of a quilt. 48 patches. I wish I had my phone on. I would show you a picture. And it's gorgeous. And it's going to hang in the Brockton mayor's office.
Oh, nice.
And
so in other words, when people will see that, there will be a visual.
Yes.
Of the individuals whose lives have been taken.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? What do you think that's doing for people when they see their loved one there? Does that help?
It's inspirational.
Okay.
To know that the legacy lives on.
So they're gone but not forgotten.
Never.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Never forgotten.
So it's going to be in the mayor's office as a reminder that we need to do more from a municipality standpoint of view, that the city is behind it, that we're with these women, we're with these families,
yes,
we're with these survivors,
yes,
that have overcome these particular barriers.
Yes.
You mentioned the drugs and the alcohol. How devastating you think that is for us as in our community?
So in the communities, global, Roxbury, Dorchester, Brockton, Lowell, I seen some things yesterday going through Lawrence that I'm just expecting for it to stop. This epidemic has to cease.
So drugs and alcohol, as well as the opiate addiction, the homelessness, the mental health issues that are taking place, homelessness, that people who are homeless are finding themselves with nowhere to go. How do you reconcile all of this? This is heavy stuff.
Very.
It's not what you call, we're sitting at our kitchen table and you were just kicking it. We're kicking it. We're talking about life and what life brings to us. And life is sometimes not kind to us.
Mm.
Kicks you in the teeth, knocks you down, to tell you you're not this, you're not that, but we rise up anyway.
Gonna rise. You right? Come on.
No. You the show. I'm
so
just trying to get you going.
You're all in my subject. so we have this upcoming event in Brockton, October 5th.
October 5th of this year?
Yes. It's called Shoe City Festival.
Shoe City Festival.
And
okay.
Brockton is known for shoes. So with that.
And Rocky Marciano, but go ahead.
Yeah, but it's a big shoe. I know.
So it was a shoe factory.
Right. So we're doing this event October 5th that's going to have all kind of vendors. We're doing a shoe sculpture, and they're just doing some things in Brockton.
It's going to be down on Main Street?
It is. It's going to be down on Main Street, right where the old bat terminal used to be.
Okay.
There's going to be vendors. There's going to be dancers.
Okay. Okay. Face painting for the kids and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes. Food trucks. Mr. Mayor Rodriguez and Andrea Burton, and the city's putting this on. And it's going to be major. So that after that is over, the following week, I'm going into Pick Park, they call it.
Okay. You have to explain that.
Okay.
Be sure to tune in next week when we will continue this conversation right here on 93.7 WEEI.
Community Focus. Thanks for listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams. Be sure to tune in next week for another segment of Community Focus.
Community Focus.
This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI and WEEI.com, Boston.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.